All right, well, with that, I'm going to call the work session to order with roll call.
Mayor Lundberg.
Here.
Counselors Van Gordon.
Here.
Moe.
Here.
Moore.
Here.
Stair.
Here.
Woodrow.
Here.
Piccinieri.
Present.
Okay, we have two items on the work session agenda. I just want to remind everybody we have a CETA meeting tonight, too, so... Yeah, keep that in mind. So the first is library board applicant interviews, and Barry.
Can you go track it?
Yeah. Sorry about that. The longer thing. Always helps out the staff. That's the first thing. There are three openings and three applicants.
Isn't that weird how that happens?
Oh, it's perfect.
The only downside is it could be.
It could be perfect.
Yeah.
Most of the time it is.
Enjoy your time on.
I did.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a big trip. We went to Japan.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That's what I was
expecting. But, yeah, got to go there. It was amazing. Yeah.
And you spent any time in Kyoto?
Yeah, we were in Kyoto and then went to Nagoya. So my husband's company was working on a big plywood press. We're doing the programming for it, and so I got to tag along while they were doing it.
Sounds like fun.
What, way to take one for the team on that one.
I know, yeah. Exactly. I know.
Who's taking one for who? What?
Yeah.
I missed something?
Exactly. You know, if I gotta go, I guess. Right. That's how I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And then that second place we went to, there were not many, very many Westerners there. It's not a touristy place. And so people kept saying to us, are you going on business? Like, what are you doing here?
Is this winter for them? Or?
No, it was like the very end of summer, and it was still pretty hot and humid. It rained a couple days, and then it sounded like it was going to cool down pretty quick.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Where was it? Japan.
Oh, wow. Okay, you're talking way.
Yeah.
My mom's side of the family are Presbyterian missionaries to Japan, so they spent 2 years over here and then 2 years over there.
Right. Right.
In Kyoto, actually.
Oh, in Kyoto. Yeah, it's amazing. I apologize. Oh, here she is.
Sugar is just. I miss being overwhelmed by sugars.
Send
your cookies back up.
And the cheese.
The crackers and cheese.
Yeah, what happened with the crackers and tobacco?
Steers, Bogart, and the cheese.
You want the crackers up this way?
So I apologize. The candidates are coming tonight for the library board, but they were the timing is incorrect. They were going to meet at 5:50, and I apologize. I just didn't want to get this squared away. They are coming tonight, though. So if you wanted to swap us on the agenda, I don't know if that's possible.
Is that okay?
Oh yeah.
Yep. We'll take the development group then. Okay.
Are you ready?
Sorry about that, Mark.
Ready.
Thank you.
Oh, you bet.
Did you need those?
No.
Oh.
But I had them left over from football game on Saturday.
Yeah.
I don't need them in the house. So, good place to bring them.
I didn't think I was going to pop it.
Okay.
Hi, Mark.
So, we're going to talk.
We are.
Okay.
Good evening, Mayor and Councilors. Thanks. I'm back for my quarter to be checking with you on the Development Code update. Although tonight, I think there's a little bit more to talk about than just a standard update. I want to talk with you about primarily the middle housing bill that was passed at the state legislature. It's the one that talks about requiring duplexes on every lot in the city. And in addition to that, requiring up to fourplexes.
You say require or allow?
Or allow, yeah. allowed.
Requiring them to be. And up to fourplexes in all areas, and we'll talk about that. The legislation, the bill number is House Bill 2001. There's been quite a bit of discussion about it in the news, and I'm sure you've run across it. So I did want to just dive into a little bit more detail about what's in the bill and what we're looking at in terms of how we're going to implement the bill and how it affects the current process of the code update as we're already moving forward. So with that, tonight I'm going to be asking for some your feedback and input on how we implement that. I have been meeting with the governance committee, which, as you know, consists of two of the city councilors, Councilor Moe, Councilor Van Gordon, and then two of the planning commissioners. So we've gotten their feedback, and that is the basis of our recommendation tonight of how we do implement that. So in terms of what House Bill 2001 or the Middle Housing Bill requires, as I just mentioned, the main focus for me related to code update has been the two provisions I just mentioned. It does require, so for any lot in the city that's residentially zoned that allows a single family home, we have to also allow duplexes to be sited on those lots. Now that's even without regard to our density limitations. So similar to how the state implemented the ADU regulations that said now we have to allow ADUs, accessory dwelling units, on every lot, the duplex provision in my mind is pretty parallel to that. It's just now there's no size limitations like there were on ADUs, and it's a full-fledged duplex everywhere.
So, do you want to take questions?
Sure, I'm happy to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Joe?
So, just so I can start this off in my head, on imaging that in my head, you're talking about a separate building from the single family dwelling, so that way you have a total of three housing units on the one lot, or an attached, or building a duplex on a single family empty lot.
So it, a couple of things. It could be all of that, or, so in my mind.
Well, what's the law saying we have to do?
Well, they don't, well, let's see. And you have the law in your package.
Right.
You have the House bill. And I'm trying, they don't define duplex in the legislation. So we define currently in our development code a duplex as a building, which to me reads as it's one building. It's not two separate buildings. Mm-hmm. However, in my mind, it would make sense. And I'm drafting code every day as I come to work. I mean, I'm working on this currently. I've defined duplex in draft form now as any two units on one lot, whether it's attached, detached, however it's configured. My professional opinion is I don't think there should be a difference whether they're attached or detached.
Can they be vertical?
Yes. Now,
so empty lot new construction or pre-existing, or it doesn't matter?
So you could have an existing single family home.
Mm-hmm.
You could convert the garage to a second unit. You could add on above the house to add a second unit. You could add on behind the house to add a second unit attached.
Okay.
You could build a separate structure in the backyard that's detached and have it be a second unit. All of those to me would be two units on one lot if you do place.
So then, if you consider the infrastructure and utilities and how those are going to be defined with sub, because they had difficulty with our ADU plan.
Right. So the developer, homeowner, property owner would have to figure out how to work that. I mean, they're two legally separate units. They would likely be separately metered for both water and electric. And two separate, you know, whether... I mean, so the development code doesn't specifically deal with utilities. And I know that's been an issue with the implementation, especially in respect to sub. We don't necessarily we don't get involved with sub's rules, how they require units to be connected.
And that's the biggest hitch. And I know I'm early on with this, but the hitch is that if you have a pre-existing meter and you have a pre-existing dwelling, building,
mm-hmm.
and you want to build on top of that building, it almost right off the bat becomes, won't pencil out by creating a separate utility for that top floor, because it's not pre-existing during construction on the first floor.
Right.
So are we building into code allowing all these different things in the spirit of the House bill, but yet we have a utility that based on their own rules, not guided by law,
right,
but by policy,
mm-hmm,
not allowing us to fulfill the spirit of House Bill 2001.
Right.
When you see what I'm saying?
Same thing with the ADUs.
It's very difficult. We would have many more ADUs if these utilities were allowed hookups that make sense for the builder, but that's not happening.
And there's a lot of reasons that a second unit may not pencil for a property owner. And some of those design considerations are definitely a part of that. I'll mention another part of the bill, and I wasn't really going to talk about this part tonight because it's not,
sorry,
in my mind, directly related to the code update, but it is related to what you're talking about for sure, and our building codes division is working on this. So another part of the legislation requires the state building codes division to figure out new rules to make it easier to divide an existing single family home into up to four units, so internally to the structure.
Where is that?
And I'm just going to get my scribbled up version of it here.
It's under section
4
nine.
Units in one single.
Which section?
It's under section 9, which is on page, it actually starts on page 9 out of 11 of the House bill itself. So I don't know what PDF page that is, but if you're looking at the House bill, at the bottom corner there are page numbers there.
So that's, I mean, so there's multiple moving parts with this legislation. And that part deals more with the building code side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe what I hear you talking about is more related to some of the building code provisions. But in addition, I understand, and again, I think it's outside of our development code to figure out how sub requires sewer or water and electric metering. And even for our own public works for sewer hookups,
mm-hmm,
how we talk about that. It can definitely be a consideration as we're trying to incentivize these multiple,
right,
units to implement the legislation.
So then it would be something that through legislation we would have to go back to legislators to, if they want this to work in almost any city, if they have a separate utility not run by the city, then they're going to have to do some sort of legislation that's going to mandate those utilities to work with the cities to allow this type of construction. Otherwise, the utility is in charge of the city in regards to development.
Right. Correct. So that may happen through this building codes division analysis of the building code regulations. The other opportunity that we are staying in close contact with our state partners about is the rulemaking process. So this House Bill 2001 legislation requires the state to go through rulemaking to develop administrative rules how to implement this,
mm-hmm,
legislation. And we're going to, to the extent we can, plug into that and participate in the rulemaking that could help address some of those concerns.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't see us being able to incentivize infill and construction for new housing in the foreseeable future when you have a utility have the ability to say, no, you can't do that because we don't have this, or our policy, not state law, but our policy says, well, you got to have this meter here and this meter here, and oh, you can't do that because the building won't allow it because it wasn't designed with it. So now we have to try to figure out some sort of way that we would allow in our building code some sort of oddball utility hookup,
mm-hmm,
system as opposed to requiring it up against the wall with the standoff pipe at 4 feet above the roof line.
Yeah, or they're underground.
Or underground.
Yeah. I mean, one of the components of these multiplexes, whether they're internal to an existing house,
right,
and or they're adding units to the to lot in some fashion is, in theory, somebody could condominiumize these units and sell them off separately.
Right.
And yes. So then what happens then? They would need to be separately metered at that point if they're condominiumized.
But they already have to have a separate address.
Right.
So.
And, yeah, so they could be even privately metered behind the one main meter if they were all on one meter. I mean, there's lots of ways to think about those things.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Leonard.
So middle housing, pardon my ignorance, that would translate to medium density housing?
Not necessarily.
No.
Although, so the example I've been using is our current low density residential zone. Okay. The density range is 6 to 14 units per acre today,
okay.
And that's net. That equates to a minimum lot size of about 3,000 square foot lots. It might be around 3,100.
Okay.
So, it's theoretical, but somebody could come in and plat a subdivision of, say, 3,000 square foot lots at the maximum end of our density for low density residential.
Okay.
And build single family homes on every one of those lots. Or they could, and maybe they just sell them to single family homes, but then the homeowners come in and over the years or over time, people want to add a second unit to those lots. Or they build all those 3,000 square foot lots as duplexes, and it's essentially double the allowed density maximum for our low density residential zone.
So in other words, any tract that's been designated for single family homes would now have to be opened up to the possibility of all of these units?
Correct.
So is there existing building code that governs all of these in a single family home? I mean, specifically to a single family home tract, or is there just building code that's specific to duplex, triplex, fourplex, cottage clusters in any tract? I mean,
so, and you're saying building code. Are you really asking about development code? Or?
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I don't deal with the building code, which is, you know, how big are the boards you use to build the house, or, you know, how you pour the foundation. But in terms of our development code, the zoning part, and how many units can be on a lot, and what the zoning is?
Well, I'm thinking mostly about just the size of these things, because I can imagine a cottage cluster really crowding the margins of a single family lot.
Right.
And so would we still be governed by any size limitations in a cottage cluster?
So we still have setback requirements, and
okay.
We can still have height requirements, and we might be jumping ahead here a little bit to let's see if I can get back to the correct slide. I maybe left a slide off of here. I had one that's a slide that talked about siding standards. So I'll just talk about that for a second. So the legislation gives the city the ability to have siding standards for, and I'll just read the language really quick, for design, for siding and design. So we can have standards to regulate the siding and design of these units. They have to be reasonable, they can't be unreasonable, and they can't be cause unreasonable cost or delay, is the language in the legislation. So what exactly that means, nobody's going to know really until it's litigated. And it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. I think our legal staff is opinionated about that it can't be at the, or opined about that it can't be at the legislative level.
Yeah, you're gonna be busy, Christina.
So LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals, who takes up all of the, you know, the hearings when people think the city's made a wrong decision, has said that it's really nearly impossible to say, like, in our ordinance of updating the development code, what rises to that standard. But they have overturned a few things where there was no connection between the standard and something the city wanted to achieve. So in one case, they required, a city required a grading plan and report when no information that would be shown on that grading plan or report was relevant to whether or not the application should be approved.
Okay.
So you can't require a whole bunch of information that is irrelevant to any criteria of approval. And then short of that, they've said these will have to be case-by-case basis. It's a really, which is good for us in a way that it's something we can, if we're being reasonable, we should be able to get through the code update project, but we may not know that something's a development impediment in that way until we get to case-by-case development if we don't have stakeholder input that identifies it.
So I'm sensing this could cause a lot of cases for the Planning Commission too, right? Or would that be under their bailiwick?
It depends on the type of process that you adopt. And so currently subdivisions and site plan reviews are decisions that are made by staff with public notice.
Okay.
And that has the decisions made by staff, it can be appealed to the Planning Commission.
I see.
The Planning Commission hears the appeal, makes a decision, and then that appeal can be appealed to the Land Use Board of Appeals. There's another process where the City Council can take it up and weigh in if there's policy concerns going on there, but typically it goes from Planning Commission or hearings official if it's outside city limits.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And I think partly to your question is that the short answer is yes, we can regulate some of the size and how they're integrated into neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned cottage clusters. We can put a size provision for cottage clusters. Say they can't be over 900 or 1,000 square feet in size per cottage, and the setbacks are a certain distance from property lines and the height limits. I mean, all those standards that we have today in our development code for how different types of housing will continue to
would
be
still
in
apply.
Place.
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks.
Sure.
So, Mark, a couple of examples of, you know, what we've done already is Fairhaven, that's off of Fairview, because those are cottage or they're cluster homes where they share a driveway,
mm-hmm.
and the two garages are basically share a wall. The other is, and I haven't driven by to look at it, is Habitat for Humanity has 6 lots, but they're putting 12 houses on them.
Okay.
So in my mind, we have some variation already.
Correct.
That is allowed,
right,
based on whatever you do. And Habitat has, you know, they share a fence line, they share, you know, there's no garages.
Right.
It's a different style of putting a house together, but the idea is that you get 2 full houses on one lot. And as far as I know, that one's went through. They may hear from.
Well, I think it's right behind where I live.
Right there. Yeah.
They are actually on each individual lot because Habitat is a homeownership model. They have a shared wall, but that wall is on a property line. So they are single family attached.
Okay, but it's still, my understanding is they originally were 6 lots that,
yes,
maybe got divided then again.
Correct.
And now they're, but we did basically double the size.
Absolutely.
Or double the amount of housing that could be put in that same amount of property,
yeah,
which, you know, does increase affordability and, you know, helps. It's a model that, you know, we have supported a lot in the past, but it seems to fit into this sort of what the middle housing or this legislation is trying to get out in,
right,
terms of putting more density in.
And so some of what, how I see this new legislation impacting the code project is figuring out how do we want to integrate these new housing types into existing neighborhoods. And so some of the design standards that we're talking about, are there setback considerations or windows looking in the neighbor's yard considerations, some of those design elements for privacy and those types of things that people are going to have concerns about. Parking is always a big kind of hot topic that, okay, if somebody's going to put up a fourplex in the middle of a single family neighborhood, that one lot that usually would, that previously would have only had a single family home on, has 4 units on it, now are there, you know, 4 cars instead of 1 or 2, and those kind of things. So figuring out just how to integrate those, in my mind, will require more public involvement. I think we want to hear from the public what their concerns are and how they feel some of the things should be implemented. So I'm going to get to talking about the timeline of the project. There were a couple other points I just wanted to make.
Stephen, mm-hmm, had his hand. Do you want to?
Who owns the land?
Well, private property owners own land typically.
But you have one lot, you buy a fourplex on it.
Right.
One lot.
how do they handle ownership of land?
Well, again, it would be a rent, a fourplex typically would be like a rental, and it would be four units on one piece of property that then an owner owns and rents the unit.
And I think of it like an apartment.
Right, a small apartment building, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That works much better. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sean, and then Sherry, and then we will let you get
that's
them.
Fine.
Okay.
Just, I guess, one comment that every time we sort of talk through this bill, it just really drives home for me that, like, this has may force big changes in our housing market, right? Like, and we're, you know, over the long term, we're going to see a lot more rentals that are out there. And so, like, how citizens in the community are sort of interacting with, you know, where they live, I think is going to fundamentally change.
Yes.
I just want to take this opportunity to mention, too, that as part of the legislation, as they were developing it, Springfield was involved in the development of the legislation, and we specifically asked for the housing type of townhomes to be added to this list. So there was at least one opportunity for an ownership product. Previously, townhomes were not on the list, mm-hmm. and all the middle housing types they had were basically rentals products. So Springfield has taken the position for quite some time that we want to encourage home ownership, right?
Yes.
So we felt getting that townhome allowance added in there was an opportunity, again, as Sandy was talking about, the home ownership model is one that we can continue to be built on.
Yeah. Sherry?
My question is, it says duplexes must be allowed on every lot or parcel, right. And then it says all middle housing types must be allowed in every area. Aren't all middle housing types allowed on every lot or parcel?
No. And it's specific.
So how is that? What is the differentiation?
So that's a great question because nobody really knows what
I see.
In every area means. And I could probably defer to Christina again about what in an area has meant in the past.
Yeah, so in other contexts, in areas zoned for residential use is the words the statute uses. Mm-hmm. And in other contexts, that in area zoned for type language has meant in a residential zone. They just use a lot more words because people started to try to nitpick, like, oh, if I call it mixed-use residential, then now it's not a residential zone, for example. And so they're just trying to broadly describe what we would consider to be residential zoning districts as opposed to zones that are commercial and or industrial. And so I think that same, I mean, it hasn't been specifically evaluated in this context, and there's not a lot of legislative history, but I think that time will bear out that it just means within our LDR, within our MDR, within our HDR, we have to, or if we have, some jurisdictions have only neighborhood-specific types of residential, and so if we were to do that, I think it would also apply to each of those, like, sort of like refinement plan areas. But we don't have that type of thing for residential.
Okay, so, in other words, even though a duplex must be allowed on every lot, a triplex might not or could possibly be.
Correct. So, like, currently we allow duplexes on corner lots in LDR.
Right.
The analogy would be that we would allow a duplex on every lot, like we do for single family.
Right.
But you could only allow triplexes and fourplexes on corner lots or other types of standards that specify within
and
the zone
within the
where
the size of the lot or the parcel.
Correct.
That we're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. That's clear as mud.
We did talk with our governance committee about how we would want to regulate those in-area provisions. One thought is we could just leave it up to the density number. So depending on how big the lot size was, we have the density standards that would determine how many units could be on a lot. So today, if you have a single low-density residential lot, and it's, I don't know, let's say 10,000 square feet, you have a pretty large lot. Well, if it's not a corner lot, you can't even do a duplex. But based on that size, you could do up to three units. So if we just use the size of the property as the regulating factor in determining how many units can be placed, we may not regulate where they can be. Again, we might have some design considerations for setback and impacts and height and things. But rather than, as Christina mentioned, saying, okay, you can have triplexes and fourplexes now on every corner lot. You know, we've talked about duplexes being allowed mid-block.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want triplexes and fourplexes mid-block also, if the property is big enough, or if there's certain situations where it might make sense.
So that's where your job comes in with that development code specifying what we are asking as a city, and we can regulate that. Is that what I'm understanding?
Correct, yes, as long as they're reasonable.
So just a couple, because once you get past a duplex, then you almost automatically are going to have a second story. Mm-hmm. And that's traditionally, particularly, you know, I know the older CC&Rs, you know, many times they dictate that it can only be single story, that you can't go up two stories, although you can get a variance or whatever, go petition everybody in the neighborhood. But that would automatically change that. Pretty much, unless you can figure out a way to get four on a ground.
Yeah, I don't know about old CC&Rs or pre-existing CC&Rs that limit, say, to a single story, if that would regulate or not. We wouldn't enforce it.
Yeah, so the... So the Act just applies to CC&Rs going forward. Mm-hmm. So going forward, you couldn't put any of those types of limitations in CC&Rs, but it doesn't touch those older ones. And so so the city might give a heads up, FYI, you have these CC&Rs, but we don't apply them. So we may grant a development approval and somebody may build and get sued or get an enforcement from their HOA. There are a lot of exceptions to, I know from prior private real estate background, there are ways that property owners can get out of CC&Rs if circumstances are changed or they if other properties have developed second story, like, you know, bonus rooms over the garages, then they may not be able to use that to enforce in the, but it's, it would be a civil private to private.
Yeah. No, and I understand. Just,
I know.
Yes, that's how that works. So just as a question out right now, because I know you're trying to get through it, but part of the conversation at the state level with particularly other mayors is, you know, we built our infrastructure for single family residential for this entire area, and now suddenly you're going to plop in this much higher density housing. Is that, have we accounted for that? Because you can go into an infill site now and completely change with that. Maybe it would accommodate a fourplex.
Right.
So now you've got four instead of one, and you're going to make infrastructure impacts at some point if you start building multiples of anything on any street in any neighborhood. Is just, you know, just bringing it up that has come up at the state level, because many of these small communities, they have very little infrastructure anyway, and the idea now suddenly they have to do everything at higher densities is not a popular concept.
Correct. So I have talked with our engineering staff about the infrastructure components. Some of our engineering group is working on looking at our sewer master plan for our sewer system. You know, typically, well, as you know, infrastructure is expensive to build. So in some respect, I think about, well, let's fully utilize the infrastructure we do have in the ground. Streets are an exception, they're on top of the ground. But so if we typically build an 8-inch sewer pipe, how much capacity is in a sewer pipe of that size? And is a single family neighborhood really utilizing the full capacity, or how many multiplexes could be built until it has its maximum capacity? So they're doing some of that analysis now. I mean, there's a lot more to it than just the pipes. There's the pump stations and all the other parts of the infrastructure. But the other part is, how much of this are we really going to realize? Is it 1 in 10 lots might put a fourplex on, or 2 out of 10 lots might do duplexes, or is it really, should we plan for every lot's ultimately going to have multiple lots? And I don't, from talking with engineering, they're not assuming we're going to have full build out, every lot has 4 units on it. So we have to make some assumptions about what the real impacts might be long term.
It was just, it was worth, you know, it just stuck in the back of my mind that we could impact our infrastructure unwittingly if we're not very deliberate about how we go about implementing the policies.
Specific to the transportation infrastructure, there's some interesting language in the legislation that basically accepts us from having to account for the density in regard to the transportation planning rule, the TPR and Goal 12. that talks about transportation. So basically it's saying we get a pass if we're going to now be implementing all this multi-unit housing. Don't worry about the streets.
Level of service, D.
We're good. I mean, that's essentially what it says.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
Tricky all right. stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll let you...
I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the dates and deadlines that are in the legislation. So there's certain requirements that the state themselves are required to meet. I have kind of, I've taken our project schedule and put some lines on it that show some of the dates and deadlines. The first, well, let's see, did I even put this deadline on there? Yeah, the first deadline related to this legislation is not until the end of next calendar year. So the end of 2020 is when the state themselves is required to have the rulemaking process done and a model development code done for implementing this. That cities could choose to take that model code and just adopt it, or potentially somewhat smaller cities that fall under this legislation could, you know, may not have the staff or time or ability to adopt their own new code. They could take that code and adopt it and implement it. But that will also inform what the state sees as the nuts and bolts ways of implementing this. Now, if you see that blue line on there, that by the time they have their model code done, we're going to be already into our adoption process. Or by the original schedule, we would already be done with our housing adoption process. So that's one thing to consider. The next date would be a year and a half from that point, so the middle of 2022 is when the legislation requires us at the city to be done in adopting our own regulations to implement this legislation. Again, whether that's the model code or our own code. After that date, the middle of 2022, if we have not adopted our own regulations to implement it, or adopted the model regulations, the state model code will be directly applied to the cities. So we won't have a choice. It'll go into effect. And cities will have to. I mean, developers can say, these are the rules now, even though you haven't adopted them. These are the rules I need to play by that the state came up with. So I see...
No, they didn't do that.
But there's an opportunity for us in that, and that is, one, we're on the front end of this thing. We're out in front of the required implementation dates. And to me, I think we can be innovative and actually come up with a way that this community wants to implement these things. We may not get it exactly right in terms of what the state ultimately says, but I think we can get it pretty close. And I think, you know, once the code is done in general and updated, it'll be a living document. There will need to be tweaks to it that happen over time. So we can take those opportunities to tweak our code, to refine anything we may need. But for me, I think being out in front of the state process isn't a bad thing. But that's something I want to hear from you on and think of what you have to say. I'm going to jump to the governance committee recommendation, and that is, so we did talk about some options. One is to go ahead and try and fully implement the legislation now with the code update project. There will be timeline impacts in doing that. It will extend out the phase one, and I can jump back to the timeline in a minute you have in your packets, but phase one would be basically extended out by 3 months. It'll provide us a little bit more opportunity to do public outreach and get input from the public on how to integrate these new housing types into our community. And then the subsequent phases really would be pushed off a little bit further. It would extend the overall timeline by 6 months at the end of this. And what that would do is delay the start of phase two till after the first of the year, so we can go with our full focus into this housing phase and figure out how to do the implementation now, and then kick off the commercial phase once we have a draft of the residential code available to go out to the public and start getting feedback.
Do you mean commercial deployment phase? Is that what you're
saying? Correct, yeah.
Saying? Okay.
Yeah. So the other options would be, okay, we could put we could do the work on the housing phase now without trying to fully implement the legislation, kind of going down the road we started and just do a little bit of the work for housing, and then either set that aside and come back to it, or go ahead and try and complete it with the idea that we would come back around to it again later within the state timeline of when we have to fully implement House Bill 2001. And then lastly, as you see up there, the other option would be to just stop working on housing altogether right now, set it aside, move on to the subsequent phases, commercial, industrial, or employment phase, and then come back to the, all of the housing later. So the governance committee's recommendation was to go with option one, to try to fully implement it now, with the understanding that it would impact the timeline. And I can just point to, you know, these light yellow bars are kind of the old original timeline. And so these bright yellow highlighted parts, this is the extension of the public involvement phase. This is kicking the adoption phase out this additional 3 months. And then the subsequent phases are a 6 month delay. By the end of the project, there's an additional 6 months at the end.
Are you ready for
something? Yeah, so I'll turn it over to you. You can provide me comments and feedback.
Sharon.
Well, I was curious about this funding that the state was looking for and how that would be impacted by the decision that we would make about either forestalling the whole thing and then coming back. I mean, where would the funding come in and be available?
So we have been talking with our state partners about that. They're still trying to figure out exactly how to structure their funding. There is a meeting at the end of this week. So DLCD is the Department of Land Conservation Development. Their elected or appointed body is LCDC, the commission. The department's meeting with LCDC on Thursday or Friday this week to talk about some of those things. We're staying plugged into that process to know as soon as we can how they're going to structure those grant programs. In the legislation itself, at the very end, it's section 15. It's on the last page of the legislation. It'd be page 10 of the legislation. Section 15 at the very bottom talks about prioritizing the technical assistance. And one of the things they talk about prioritizing the grant money to jurisdictions that commit to implementation earlier than the date required. So again, we're out in front. We think, we are committed probably to implementing some of this at the very least, if not trying to implement all of it earlier than required. And so I leave it to you to tell me if that's really the route you want us to go.
In reviewing this today and listening to your comments now, I think I'm probably in favor of the recommendation of going ahead and implementing it. It seems like it's kind of, there's no reason for us to interrupt. If we had a good, solid reason that says, okay, we're waiting for information so we can do this and then stop and then go back, but it doesn't seem like there's anything that's telling us to do that. And so my opinion is to go ahead and implement. Now, like you said, we can be innovative in areas where we might have some great ideas or some things like that. And as far as the funding is concerned, you just said there's a possibility if we get out in front of it that grant funding could be there as well. So I think I'm in favor. And along with that, it also might create more of an interest that we end up with more people who are interested in the TAC for the employment, which we have not had to this point. So just doing it in that kind of a sequence might create more of an interest in that. So I would be inclined to go along with the recommendation.
Sean?
Well, I'm on the governing committee, so I was in favor of option one. One other consideration that we had when we really got into it was that when we looked at the technical advisory committee for the employment and commercial, we needed extra time to recruit the right people, and it would build the extra time to allow them to recruit the right people. I do think there's a legislative thing that we want to consider here, which is just really as sessions kick up again, is to just be conscientious of the fact that We have legislators who are going to like forcing these housing things by saying, if you don't do it by a certain date, we will do it for you. And some of those are part in the Lane County delegation, and we just have to be willing to talk to our legislators and go, it's fine that if you're making rules, but, you know, the we're going to do it for you is, that's a little heavy-handed.
Originated in Portland.
Not this one. This one originated out of Lane County, is my understanding.
Tina Kotek.
Yeah, I thought it was Julie Fahey. But like we gotta go talk to them. We gotta protect our rights to decide what we want to do with the city. And you know, they're getting just a little happy with the you will do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's a trend or not.
Yeah, why not?
Okay,
Joe.
So I think it's smart to keep going where we're going. There's no reason for us to lose our traction on that. And I kind of look at it as that, I think in a whole building arena that we have people in legislature that, and the writers in legislature that look towards us as kind of a, hey, can you do some more work for us? And that way it'll save us some time. And I'm thinking that if we go forward and we have a product before they come up with their product, that they may turn right around and use ours as a model, and we won't have to rewrite anything, very little of anything. And
you're,
I mean,
such a dreamer.
Entrepreneur.
I know. I get that way in the fall.
Maybe we could sell it to them.
Well, but seriously, it's like to do, you know, to continually offer them, this is what we've got, hey, you want to check out what we have, I think we can save you some work, et cetera, et cetera. That it could be something that would be, at least the end product that they have, would be less impactful for us, as opposed to us waiting to see what happens. So, and that makes sense to just keep the ball rolling. And we're doing this originally so we can make it easier for development in the first place. So I don't know why we would voluntarily say, oh, what, we went too fast, when this is already slow, you know, so.
Okay. Did you want to say something, Sandy?
Yes, I just want to give Mark some kudos because in line with what Councillor Piscinieri is saying is we had a conversation with our representative from the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I think as a result of Mark's detailed questions and discussion with him, Mark's been asked to be on a legal affairs discussion sponsored by DLCD to talk about how to implement this bill. So I think that that's an example of what you're saying already.
Yeah.
They may not actually use our code verbatim, but they're going to at least be paying attention to what
I can totally see that. So, and we might as well get them right, because we know they're getting misguided if we don't.
They're going to be misguided anyway, but I mean, well, we want to minimize it if possible. Yes. Okay. All right. Sherry.
And I was going to say the same thing. I appreciate the fact that you've already been right on top of it and,
yeah,
you know, are seeing the impact that it's going to have on what we're doing. Thank you very much for that. So as long as we're not going to have to redo a whole lot of things, which sounds like you're avoiding already, then go forth and conquer.
It sounds like our timing was fortuitous
in
terms
awesome.
Of the fact we were rewriting our development code anyway.
Right.
So it is. We can look at it on the half full, is that we have a chance to be on the front. So,
half full guy.
Okay, I know you were just a little more on the dreamy side than we were. Anyway, okay, so is that enough direction?
That's
I think
great.
We all agree.
Okay.
To go ahead and keep moving ahead.
Good work, Mark.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Yeah.
We'll be back in front of you soon to check in again. So.
Sure wish I was doing what you were doing. Not. Oh, I'm sorry.
There's the show that we know.
So nothing's being added to our notebooks and we're still storing them here, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I will collect them at the end of the meeting.
Oh, goody. We don't have to carry them.
You don't
anywhere.
Have to carry them anywhere.
Yay.
I've got them.
Because Mary will beat you if I put it on the kitchen counter.
Oh,
you're
good too.
Chew.
We actually went pretty fast, just so you know.
Yeah, we did.
Faster than I thought we would.
I apologize for that miscommunication.
Don't worry about it.
Don't take it out on the
don't worry about it.
Oh, we're just going to be terrible.
They were on time.
I do want to say, though, I think our CETA meeting is supposed to start when?
At 7 o'clock.
And it was approximate?
Yes.
So as the candidates come in, if you could mention that we are somewhat on a timeline now.
Okay.
And that, you know, short answers.
Just be succinct and direct.
Yeah. Do they each have 10 minutes, or should I say, I can give them a time limit, too?
Well, we've got three. And
six
we
questions.
Have to have room for deliberation.
Six questions each, 18 minutes, and it's three, it's four. Yeah, you should be right.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, thank you again for arranging the meeting. The Library Advisory Board has three open positions and three candidates for you to interview this evening. And the attachments, the order that the attachments list the candidates, it's Dr. Lynn Allen and then Angela Michelli. But Amy Lyons, if we could move her to be the first candidate that you interview. Yeah, she has another pressing thing going on outside of this. So it would be Amy Lyons first that you're interviewing tonight. And just appreciate you giving direction on appointments that you're looking for them. So,
okay.
Right? So, okay. You all have your questions, and I'll just let them know the time.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. We're ready to rip them out.
Okay.
That's semi-residual number five.
Good evening.
Hey.
Hi. So we're going to go around and each ask you a question.
Sure.
But we'll start out by introducing ourselves.
Marilyn Woodrow, Springfield City Council from Ward 5.
Leonard Stair, Ward 4.
Sean Manning Gordon, Ward 1.
Steve Mount, Ward 2.
Sherry Moore, Ward 3.
And Joe Pishnary, Ward 6, which is the Thurston area.
And Christine Lundberg, I'm the mayor. So I asked the first question, and I'm going to ask, why are you interested in serving on the library board?
Great, thanks. I have these great first memories of it's called the Bookmobile, coming down our street. I grew up in Gig Harbor, Washington, and it was like the most exciting thing. It was this rainbow bus that they reconstructed that the library had. It was full of books, and so it made it so that the library was accessible to people everywhere, and it was just the highlight of my week as a little kid. So I grew up just loving the library, and it was a really important part of just my growing up experience. And now I have two kids, and I love our library. And I have looked for different ways to participate and get involved. And Emily mentioned that you should try out for the library advisory board. That's why I'm here.
Thank you. Marilee.
Hi. How do you think the work of the library board will improve our community?
Well, I think that it's really exciting to just see the different ideas that are considered in the library board. And I'm really excited for the upcoming survey that they're trying to put together just to figure out how we can connect with more people in the Springfield area so that the library can be more used, more loved. And adapt to the needs of the community. And so I just want to participate in that. I want to be part of making those decisions.
Thank you.
What are the ways that you see that you could communicate the library and its activities to the community?
Well, my kids go to Yolanda Elementary, and so I've already started
word of mouth bringing different things into the school and sharing with the teachers, like, hey, do you know this is a possibility? Hey, do you know about these resources? Or, hey, you know, you may not be from this area, but here is a opportunity for a library card. So just trying to utilize the sphere of influence that I have. And I, right now, am the health aide at Hamlin Middle School, and so I've made sure to put up the library posters of different activities and just trying to use my sphere of influence to communicate opportunities for the community to be involved.
Very good. Thanks.
So outside of the monthly library board meetings, what amount of time would you have to volunteer or offer with work in the library?
That's a really great question. I would love to find some scheduled times. I could definitely designate a couple of hours. And I guess if there's a certain task, then I would love to, you know, fulfill that task or whatever. Are you looking for an exact quantity of hours right now? I really am passionate about
next
the
week
library.
We
I know, I'm just saying. I don't have my phone with me, my calendar, so I should not commit to anything.
We are enormously grateful for all hours.
Okay, great. Well, and I really love the library, so I think especially if there are projects or tasks, then I would love to.
Perfect, thank you.
The Springfield Museum is now managed by the library. What is your experience with city museums or any museums in general?
Well, due to the library reading program this year, our family went into the museum, and it was so awesome. And I hear that there's like, that's only one small portion of the museum. I love art museums, gone to the Seattle Art Museum many times and the Tacoma Art Museum. So I really see a real rich value in museums, both just being an opportunity for kids and all individuals to interact with history and to learn from that and to appreciate the rich history that they are living in and living with. So I have never been on a museum board, but I am a deep appreciator of museums.
So describe your professional and personal experience as it relates to your desire to become a library board member. You've really talked somewhat, but anything you'd like to add?
Sure. That's a great question. I love communicating things that I'm passionate about with people, and I'm not very intimidated by communicating those things. So if, you know, if we need to do a presentation somewhere, or if I have the opportunity to go to schools and present something, or or other avenues of communication, I would love to do that. And I can't really think of that.
That's
I'm
fine.
Sorry.
You've already really related
okay,
your,
great.
Your enthusiasm, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, can you give us an example of your experience working with a committee or a board?
Yes. I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
Excuse me. I'm not 100% right now. So I'm very sorry. I am really involved in the PTO at my kids' school, and while I cannot volunteer because I work, I can't volunteer myself officially on the board. I'm really involved.
Does that change from PTA?
Yeah, well, PTO is a different, there's PTAs, PTOs, and other acronyms also, and they all mean something different. Isn't that confusing?
Well,
yes.
PTA is a national organization. PTOs only belong to their school. How's that?
Get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I know, we're crazy. That board that's voted in has to go to a training, and like, it's very involved. And then there are, yeah, anyway, there's so many different, they have to have bylaws and all that stuff. So, I love the teamwork and camaraderie that happens within a team, and I think that it's so important both to make goals, and that's what boards tend to do, is make goals, and then the importance of accountability, fiscal accountability, and just being true to the vision of the board. excuse me, as far as specifics, I have helped run events and have helped communicate events, and then I've been a liaison for the school to the Springfield School District. I don't know with our new superintendent if that advisory board will still be happening, but.
Thank you.
So we sure appreciate you coming in. We will do our deliberations tonight, and the formal appointments are
October 7th, because of the 5th Monday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the formal appointments will be on October 7th, and you're going to make the phone calls tonight or tomorrow sometime. So you will find out much sooner.
Great. Okay. That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good night, Amy.
Thanks. You too.
We're not, all of us aren't 100%.
Good. I'm very sorry.
It's true, right?
Yeah, I'm not looking way up at 100%.
I could wish.
Yeah.
Bless you.
Speaking of.
Bless you, you can go now.
Yeah.
This must be Lynn.
Dr. Lynn Allen. Yes.
Hello. Hey. Hi. So the way we do this is we ask, each of us will ask a question.
Okay.
But the first thing we do is we'll go around and introduce ourselves.
Mary Lee Woodrow, Springfield Councilor of Ward 5.
Leonard Stair, Ward 4.
Sean Vanna Gordon, Ward 1.
Steve Bohm, Ward 2, West Springfield.
Sherry Moore, Ward 3.
And Joe Pishnery, Ward 6 out of Thurston.
And Christine Lundberg, Mayor. And my question is why.
I wish I could remember. Memorize all the names.
It's okay.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Why are you interested in serving on the library board?
I'm interested in serving on the library board because I have time and I want to do some things that are fun and different and interesting. And I have a couple of little kids who are my little granddaughters that I moved here to be near, who love books and love reading and love the library, actually. And so I just got real intrigued in this particular library. And it just looked like something to do. So I went to a meeting, and it looked good to me. Like there were a lot of good things going on. I think that outreach and wanting to get more people involved is an important part.
Great. Thank you.
Hi. How do you think the work of the library board will improve our community?
I think the library board will bring together different ideas from different places and different strata of people and kinds of folks and doing different things and kind of pull together some things outside the library that the library folk don't necessarily, you know, think of or have ideas about. I mean, I understand we don't have enough librarians in our schools. That's a problem. But I think that to have other ideas coming in besides librarians' ideas is a good thing.
Thank you.
How would you inform the community about the library and its projects?
How would I inform the community?
Yep.
I would talk about it wherever I go.
That's a good start.
I would, which I do, and be interested in doing anything set out or anything that involved outreach that there is.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Outside of the monthly meetings, what amount of volunteer time do you have to offer for work involving the library board?
Lots.
Perfect, thank you.
That sums it up.
That was a good answer. The Springfield Museum is now managed by the library. What amount of volunteer time do you have to offer? The Springfield Museum is now managed by the library. What is your experience with city museums or any museums in general?
I've attended and been to a lot of museums around the world, but I've not had any experience in management or running or design setting or anything. So none. But I think it's good to hook up with them.
Okay, thank you. Describe your professional and personal experience as it relates to your desire to become a library board member.
I read all the time. Reading is, you know, a lot, and I've traveled a lot and had, you know, way too much education, and so it's kind of nice to sit down with other people and give back and share ideas. And like I said, I have time, so I'm really interested in spending some time on different projects.
You do Windows?
Oh, no.
Sure. We'll talk later.
Only on Tuesday.
Wow. I don't know how I can beat that. Can you give us an example of your experience working with the committee or board? I saw that you did several in Colorado.
Yeah, the main one, the most interesting board was the governor's mental health board. And I was on the western slope of Colorado, so I was the only person really that was representing the whole western slope of Colorado at this board meeting every month in Denver. And there were lawyers and psychiatrists and psych nurses and psychologists on the board. And it was, you know, right in my field, so it was really, really easy for me to work with that. But I really did appreciate the collaboration. And one of the things that they did that I liked is had people come in when a topic was regarding some group of individual patients or types of folks, they'd have people come in and attend and invite them to be there. So that kind of spread it out a little further, I think. So that was a good one.
Okay. Was that a regulatory board?
It was an advisory board.
Just an advisory?
To the governor. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just the advisory board. Mental health advisory.
Thank you.
There was a lot of legal talk in there, though.
I get that.
Well, we sure appreciate you coming in and applying, and we'll make do our deliberations, make our decisions tonight, and then the formal appointments will be done on October 7th, but Carrie is going to get in touch with you after we're done with our deliberations, so you should know right away.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Have to see if she's going to show part time work at the jail. It's like the potential.
Angela's
held wrong.
Oh,
okay.
She
said she's got lots of time.
Yeah. Okay. So you can have a seat right here.
Okay.
This is Angela Michelli. It might have been incorrect in one of the.
Yeah, we were going to call you Angel.
It's Angela.
So, good evening, Angela. So, what we do is we're going to ask you each, we'll have a question each.
Okay.
But first, we'll go around and introduce ourselves.
Okay.
Marilee Woodrow, City Council for Ward 5.
Leonard Stair, Ward 4.
I'm Sean Van Gordon, Ward 1.
Steve Moe, Ward 2.
Sherry Moore, Ward 3.
Joe Pitchner, Ward 6, out in the Thurston area.
That's my area.
Yeah, I saw that.
Me too.
Yeah. And then Christine Lundberg, the mayor, and I'll ask the first question. Why are you interested in being on the library board?
Yeah, well, one major reason is we use the library all the time. We love the library. I've been really, we're a bilingual family, and I've been really, really interested in seeing just the development in the few years we've been in Springfield of the program offerings. Love to see my children speaking with other children in Spanish, and the bilingual story times and things like that. So I just was interested in being on the board, I think, to know more about what are the other programs offered at the library and how to continue developing with community outreach, you know, and also helping to build, I think, not just literacy but also cultural literacy within my own family.
Thank you.
Hi.
How do you think the work of the library board will improve our community?
Well, to add to what I already said, I think that, one, I've seen a lot more presence of the library, even on social media and within activities and events. My mother-in-law was making lace this summer at the library. So I don't know if any of you were there for that, but I've already seen just the events bringing people together. So for me, my interest in being on the library board was specifically for that. What other things can we do? What other programs can I help bring? What other ideas can I hear or share that will bring people in the community together on a more face-to-face level rather than staring at screens? I hate to say staring at screens, but just really bringing people together and interacting with one another. I think that it would make our community better.
Thank you.
How would you inform the community about the library and its projects?
Well, I already do.
All right,
I tell my friends, I bring them here,
nice.
But I think having more knowledge about, hey, there's going to be some upcoming things, or getting feedback, what kinds of things do you want to see at the library? What would draw you in more, what would bring you in the doors? I work in a parish, so I work with a lot of people, talking to them, finding out what they would want to see, finding out what they want to do. Programs for kids of all ages, I have little kids, so I'm much more knowledgeable about what's going on for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know that the library volunteers and the board volunteers also go into the schools, things like that, just to get finding what people want.
Sure.
I really like a lot of the after school, the Lego programs, getting kids working together. And yeah, I would love to know more about what's available for the adults. You know, some reading groups, I know there are some.
I like Legos, actually.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I do too.
I just don't like stepping on them.
Me too.
The Duplo is actually my favorite.
Yeah, that's what we have in our hands. The other ones are banned in our house so far. But I think, yeah, I mean, I love the events like the El Grito event, where it's bringing families in as well, and there's a little more interaction with the adults.
Sure. Thanks.
Yeah.
I was a little bit jealous of the pirate physics they had the other day. I was like, "That they didn't have that in our meeting."
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Outside of the monthly library board meetings, what amount of volunteer time do you have to offer the library board?
I mean, is that like hours a week? Or
just generally, are you available outside of just going to the monthly meeting?
Sure. I think if there's an event or a specific outreach thing the library is doing, yes, I have flexibility and availability. I have to look at my schedule for a specific thing, but I work part-time, I homeschool my kids part-time, so,
perfect. Thank you.
Yeah.
The Springfield Museum is now managed by the library. What is your experience with city museums or any museums in general?
Love Schnitzer, love the art museums. Spent a lot of time in art museums growing up. My kids to Schnitzer a lot. I've actually never been to the City of Springfield Museum. So I don't have any knowledge about art curation or preservation, but I think it would be really, I don't know of anything, any collaborations between an exhibit in the museum and the library, but I think that could be something really fun to base an event around. I would love to be more involved.
Now that they've merged them, it's going to be much easier to do.
Yeah.
Describe your professional and personal experience as it relates to your desire to become a library board member.
Well, I'm an academic. I have a PhD in political philosophy, so I love books. And my house is full of books. And I can never get enough books. Like I said, we spend a lot of time in the library, and I encourage reading. My kids are still little, but we read a lot in our family, and I love being surrounded by books.
Yeah.
So
it's really, I'm reading my books online, on my phone now, but it's just really difficult to give up that. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Wow.
Good thing you two are at the opposite ends of the table.
That's true, probably. Hello. Can you give us an example of your experience working with a committee or board?
That's a good question. I did spend some time in graduate school on a graduate school committee. It wasn't very fruitful, so probably wasn't the best experience. But I collaborate well with teams and, you know, get stuff done. Okay, this is the project, let's execute it.
And it's okay if you haven't.
Yeah, I'm just like, graduate school boards, this one's probably a little more efficient than that one was. You know? Like city, you know, graduate council, graduate school council, it wasn't very effective. So.
Got it.
So, just so you know, the museum has a Hispanic Heritage Month exhibit right now. So, it might be something.
Might be something to take my family
to. Yeah, it's definitely something to take your family to. Yeah, it's a nice exhibit. So, we will deliberate tonight. We'll make a decision. And then we make formal appointments on October 7th. But Carrie will let you know as soon as possible. About our decision, and we thank you again for coming in and applying.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Angel.
Thank you,
Angela. Marcelli.
Italian.
A little bit.
Yep. Take care.
Pick up on that.
Thank you.
Yes. What?
Everybody tonight.
No, it's the fall of the year. The chanterelles are out.
We're just excited to be here.
Chanterelles are not like psychedelic or something.
They're awesome.
Okay.
They dropped 15 pounds on yesterday.
So we need to deliberate here. We have three openings and three applications. I'll just look for a head nod.
Two of them are doctors.
Yeah.
And we have two doctors. PhDs.
Awesome.
Yay. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, I'm continually impressed with how overqualified our board members are.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you very much. And again, sorry.
Good work recruiting those.
Okay. All right. I'll pass you along. Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.